This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today we're talking about trends in journalism with Tom Rosensteel, the director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. He's with us here in Studio 3A. And joining us also now is NPR's health policy correspondent, Julie Rovner. Nice of you to join us.
Nice to be here.
A story in today's New York Times says federal investigators are taking a look at a controversial practice that came out of the Department of Health and Human Services. According to the Times, the Bush administration hired people to pose as reporters to promote the benefits of a new Medicare law. The Bush administration calls these video news releases, but are they news or propaganda? And first of all, Julie, let's listen to one of these video news releases.
Medicare officials emphasize that no one will be forced to sign up for any of the new benefits.
It's completely voluntary. Seniors will be able to partake of the new Medicare system or the old Medicare system.
The new law, say officials, simply offers people with Medicare ways to make their health coverage more affordable. In Washington, I'm Karen Ryan reporting.
So, Julie, who's Karen Ryan? Is she a journalist?
Well, as far as we know, no. According to the New York Times, she is an actress who was asked to read a script for this. Now, this is part of a broader fight that's going on really between Democrats and the Bush administration about how they are publicizing the new Medicare law. The administration says they are required in the law to make it known what's in it. The Democrats are saying that their publicity campaign is bordering and going, they say, over the line into propaganda.
And whether it's propaganda or not, I guess that's a distinction that other people may decide. But is that honest? I mean, that's not a real news report.
Well, no. Of course, the department says, and I've spoken to them today, that not only have they done this type of thing many times before, but the Democrats did it when, you know, they ran the Department of Health and Human Services, that companies do it all the time. These types of video news releases are, in fact, very common. I think what's brought this one to the forefront is this ongoing fight over how the administration is portraying the new Medicare law. I think the argument, there had been a headline that said the Bush administration hired an actor to read a script saying that, you know, eating poison is bad for you, I don't think anybody really would have been complaining. I think part of it's a combination of that with this very controversial new Medicare law.
Okay. Now, who are these stories aimed at?
Well, the stories are aimed at the nation's 41 million Medicare beneficiaries who, not so ironically, in this election year, are a key block of swing voters. The administration obviously wants to take credit for this new Medicare law. They also, as I mentioned, are required to explain how it works and how the new benefits will work. Democrats say, well, they're focusing on things that aren't going to start for 2 years, so they're obviously doing it for political reasons so that they can reap benefits in the coming election. And it's really sort of more a matter of how they're portraying it than what they're portraying.
And how did the GAO, the General Accounting Office, get involved?
Well, the Democrats asked the General Accounting Office to see whether that, not so much this video news release, but whether a 30-second TV ad and a 2-page flyer violated, there's a federal prohibition on the use of taxpayer funds for publicity or propaganda. And the GAO, in the context of investigating those, came upon these. Now, what it said about those, this is earlier television ads and the flyer, is that they were misleading and they contained omissions, but they didn't cross that line into being propaganda. Now the Democrats want to see whether maybe this video news release does.
And how is the Bush administration responding?
Well, they say they're required to run a publicity campaign. This is no different, that the Democrats are simply playing politics. This is a legitimate exercise of what it is they're trying to do, that they're just putting out information.
Mm-hmm. Let's bring Tom Rosensteel back into the conversation. What do you make of these video news releases? Is this something extraordinary, or is this something that we should have become accustomed to? It's certainly a surprise to me.
Well, it's something that I wish we were accustomed to, because I wish we knew when we were seeing them. But they are prevalent. We get them from drug companies. They appear on local television with some regularity. Now, press releases, of course, are nothing new. We've had them for 100 years. And one of the distinctions between a good newspaper and a bad newspaper has always been, well, a good newspaper doesn't take the press release and just put it in the newspaper. It may take information from the press release and use that as the beginning or the basis for reporting. So what makes video news releases sort of more pernicious is that it's very easy to put them into a newscast, and it's very hard to tell. News journalists can tell because they can see that the lighting is different, the look and feel of the photography is different, and one of the tip-offs is you will never see the reporter usually on camera in a video news release, in part so that because people would say, wait a second, she doesn't have the right microphone And she doesn't look like anybody I've ever seen on the newscast, and she's not in in our community. I that's not a backdrop I'm familiar with.
But would a local TV news outlet say our Karen Ryan reports from Washington?
They might. It's not unheard of by any means. We in the content analysis we've done of local TV, we see elements of these kinds of things on a somewhat regular basis. It's not every newscast every night by any means, but it's certainly not something that you go, what was that? Mm-hmm. You say, oh, there's a VNR. Mm.
The other thing that the Department of Health and Human Services said is that they send this in chunks. They send them just the sound bites from the Secretary of Health and Human Services and others, but also they send them the script. And what apparently happens frequently is that rather than use the reporters that they send out, their own reporters will take the scripts and they'll simply read the script that they've been provided with these sound bites. So basically they're basically rewriting the press release with their own voice.
So that's they would say, the newscaster would say, but Health and Human Services Director Tommy Thompson says... And then you would play the tape.
Right.
Okay.
You'll see them frequently, Neil, in Hollywood and entertainment reporting, where the local reporter will suddenly have an interview with
Tom Hanks,
with Tom Hanks and talking about his new movie. The script was actually written by the studio, and the interview with Tom Hanks was done by a publicist, and the voiceover is read by the local reporter. So if you've ever seen that on your local news, that'll give you a sense of how common VNRs are. The difference here, of course, is where's the line between the administration providing information to citizens about federal services and benefits, and where is the persuasion to convince people to vote for to reelect George Bush in the coming election?
Well, it's also that if you make it seem as if this is a legitimate news report, presumably, though you've just told us the American public doesn't trust journalists very much, but presumably you would trust an analysis by a reporter saying there's improvements in Medicare, as opposed to a government official saying there are improvements in Medicare.
And there is a growing sense that people discount advertising, and if you can persuade people or communicate to people through other means other than just ads outside the newscast, if you can somehow get your message into the newscast, it's more persuasive.
Julie, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Julie Rovner is NPR health correspondent. She was with us here in Studio 3A. I think you'll be able to hear more on these video news releases later today on All Things Considered. And let's continue our conversation with Tom Rosensteel and Gregory. Gregory's with us from Rockford, Illinois.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I was a newspaper reporter and editor for 10 years and then switched fields 5 years ago into public relations. And a couple of points. One, I think something that needs to be brought up is the reason a lot of these video news releases get used on local television is the short staffs and laziness of a lot of local news producers just looking to fill time. And second, I had my epiphany in what prompted a career change was when I worked at a newspaper that was sold, it was a family newspaper sold to a corporate entity, and we were brought into a big room together, and we were told that we were no longer the newsroom, we were a cost center. And that changed the thinking, you know, throughout the entire organization and had a profound impact on the newspaper, not only internally, but what people saw externally. Hmm. And as a result, I went over and joined what I used to refer to as the dark side, and now work with reporters to try to make sure that they get what they need so they can put stories out.
There, I think that Gregory's raised two issues. One is that as your audience is shrinking in local television news or most of these media, there's a unlimited number of things you can do to grow your business if you can't grow your audience. One in local television is to expand the number of news programs that you produce more hours of news and sell more ads around those. And that, if you're not increasing the size of your newsroom, stretches everybody out and makes them work harder. There's less chance for enterprise. And there's more appetite for the kinds of VNRs and syndicated material that comes in. We've documented over the last 5 years that the increase in a sizable increase in the number of stories where there's no reporter sent to the scene, just a camera, and a similar sizable increase in the use of syndicated material or feeds from other places, including pieces of VNRs, if not whole VNRs. this notion that this kind of thing, or the kind of thing that Gregory mentions, where his newsroom becomes a cost center, is precisely why I think that there's some basis for the public decline in trust. There was really a movement, I think, in the late 90s where corporations said, we need to make our newsrooms more adaptable. We need to make them listen to their audience more and more sensitive to criticism and less arrogant. We need to break the mentality of the newsroom. We need to break that notion that it's a priesthood and that they don't need to change. Now, part of the motivation for that was, yeah, newsrooms need to change and adapt and modernize, and that's positive. But if you erode that sense of mission, that sense of public interest, that sense of priesthood, it has this other effect of driving people out who think, well, you know, I didn't get into this just to be a profit center or a cost center.
Gregory, thanks very much.
You bet.
We're talking with Tom Rosensteel. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we have an email question. I'm listening to the show right now, writes Sylvia S., and would like to ask the guest how colleges preparing journalists are addressing the issues being discussed on the program. Are journalism students finding the classrooms have prepared them for what changes are happening now in the field?
Great question, because there's a whole revolution going on inside journalism education. Journalism schools and journalism education in the United States was, for a long time, very vocational. It was the apprenticeship system. You would write stories and learn in essentially a simulated newsroom and hopefully be prepared for your first job by doing that.
And a significant number of people also started out as apprentices working at newspapers, radio stations.
Skipping journalism school altogether. And there's a debate even now in whether you need to go to journalism school. You certainly are not required to have a degree in journalism to work in journalism. As the pressures on the profession have intensified, journalism educators say, well, maybe we can be a backstop. Maybe we need to change and evolve and prepare people. But there's the problem is, how do you imbue all this idealism in students and prepare them to run headlong into the realism of the workplace? And I think there's tensions over that. I was part of the committee at Columbia University last year, at which the new president of the university decided to rethink entirely the curriculum of the journalism school. That's an ongoing process that the dean is engaged in. But there was a feeling that the old style of educating journalists was, in the words of the president of the university, no longer sufficient.
Hmm. Let's see if we get one last call in. And this is Tony. Tony's with us from Wichita, Kansas.
Yes. I just wanted to comment that I think I'm fairly typical of what's changed in the attitudes of a lot of people over the years toward journalism. In that I'm 60 years old. I remember during the Watergate era having an enormous amount of respect for journalists that investigated that particular scandal. But by the time my son was ready to start college 10 years ago, my comment to him was, son, I will support you in anything you choose unless you go into journalism, and son, then you're on your own. I really had found an enormous amount of change in my attitude, and it was because of, I think, what journalists did.
Well, Tom Rosen.
Heartbreaking and headlining and trying to dig into the most sensationalistic stories and all. I just think it's fairly typical of what's happened to journalism over the last 20 to 30 years.
Tony, thanks very much for your call. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And Tom Rosensteel, we just have a few seconds left, but if there are wounds, perhaps they are self-inflicted?
Yes. Tony is not alone, and somehow the profession of journalism has got to win back that the Tonys in America, or you know, how can we survive?
Quickly, if people wanted to see a copy of this report, where could they do that?
They can go to the website www.journalism.org, and there's a big logo right there, and they can click on it, navigate it. It's there for the public for free.
Tom Rosensteel, director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism, was with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks, as always.
Thanks, Neil.
In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.